Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, Egg Chasers. This is the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously, and the podcast about rugby that is there for you 52 weeks of the year, every single Monday morning, as we have been for over 10 years into our 11th season, and we're getting to the business end of season number 11 as well. Champions Cup quarterfinals to talk about, much more besides. Joined in the rugby dungeon, this is a very civilised time to be doing this podcast, gents.
I mean, it's nice, it's light outside and everything.
Still light outside at the minute, and that's because Phil's just done his wingman job of picking JB up from the airport.
Well done, Phil.
A surprise trip for your birthday, JB.
Yeah, went to Nice, it was awesome. Went to Nice and then went to Cannes. I love those. Well, one's a town, one's a city. Love it there.
See, we went to Nice on a rugby weekend.
Wow.
Lots of espresso martinis and lots of cobbled streets, Irish bars, knees ups.
Yeah. Well, so I was wandering around Nice and I was thinking, I recognise this place. But I had no idea where I was. So I was trying to relocate the nightclub that we went to, which was down some stairs, but I don't know where it was. I could not find the life of me. I couldn't find where we watched the France Gipon.
There's only like two Irish bars there.
No, it wasn't
in the old town.
It wasn't an Irish bar.
Oh no, no, no.
We were in a pretty swanky bar.
Oh yeah, we were.
And we were sitting having cocktails.
Yes, that's right.
And they put France Gipon. Gipon in the La Défense, La Défense Arena. And I could not find that. I walked up and down the strip trying to find that place. I could not find it. Which is exactly what you do on a romantic weekend. You relive what you did with your mate.
Where are these stairs to the nightclub?
No, we had a great time in there. Trust me.
How you doing, Phil?
I'm okay. I'm very good. I was only picked up JB from the airport because my wife called JB yesterday in a panic because she wanted someone big and strong to help me lift a climbing frame over a wall into the garden, which I subsequently managed to do. And so there was no benefit from our side for receiving JB other than me picking him
but
up.
But already struck the deal, you see.
Yeah. Oh, well played. Yeah. Well played.
You did all right out of that deal.
You did all right.
Oh, that's great negotiating that.
Isn't it? Give away something which isn't important to me, something which is very important to Phil.
Well played. Well played. Right, there's a lot of rugby to talk about. Any news this week to speak of? I don't think there really is
news.
Is
there? There's huge news.
What's that?
Well, the women are going to play with size 4.5 balls.
Oh yeah, right. So let's put a little pin in that.
Yeah,
that's an interesting discussion. Okay, cool. You can always get in touch with us, by the way. contacteggchasers@gmail.com, and I will pepper the podcast with some questions and with some thoughts. Let's just dive into it. We've got four amazing games. Admittedly, there's four Challenge Cup games as well. I kept a bit more of an eye on those than I have done previously.
Why is that, Tim?
Because last weekend, for example, there was eight Champions Cup matches. How can you watch any more than eight games?
Correct. Yeah, okay,
in one weekend?
Fair. Oh, it's not because you've got... just because the rugby is on. Oh, just not because you care about the...
The lunchtime kickoffs were... there was no Champions Cup games at 12:30 PM.
Well, so, just before we get into the games, can I just raise some concerns? Not concerns, but I'd like to know your opinions. Do you think it works better to have one game Friday night, two games on Saturday, then one game on Sunday, or two Saturday, two Sunday, or like they did it this weekend?
I do like a Friday night kickoff if you're going to have four games.
I do as well.
So yeah. I did watch not all, but some of the Gloucester Ospreys game, and it did feel good win for Gloucester. They closed out the game well, but it did feel a bit underwhelming compared to the spectacle that was to come on certainly the Saturday. Yeah.
But I guess that's where you put you. But they used to do Champions Cup game. No, is it no? What was it called?
Heineken Cup.
No, Champions Cup. What's the junior competition?
Challenge Cup.
Challenge Cup, thank you. They used to do on Thursdays.
Yeah, they would occasionally.
Now, that would be more my liking. So I've got something on Thursday, which I would never normally watch. When it comes to the business end of the season, I want to spread out the game so I can see every one of them. I was ready to watch on Friday night in Nice. And to my horror, I realised that there was no game on.
No Champions.
No Champions Cup, yeah. And I'm not watching just Gloucester Ospreys.
Back to back to back on Saturday is quite a slog, isn't it?
I mean, it's glorious.
If you've got, because it's like Super Saturday, it's a replica of Super Saturday, which is always amazing, but it is a slog. If you've got other things to do, they don't get done.
Particularly like for the last 15, 20 minutes of the Leinster-La Rochelle game, I was like, what was the late game?
Northampton Bulls.
So oh, game's done. I've watched after 6 hours of rugby today. That's fine. I don't need to see the last 15 minutes.
Well, yeah. They should have been clever, shouldn't they, and put the Harlequins game on last. No one would turn off.
Yeah. That game. Let's start there. What a match.
Wasn't it?
What a result, obviously, for Quins. And I think we gave them a shot.
Just chances.
I think you two did. You two were more confident that they had a shot. I really didn't. Like, maybe it's overconfidence, hubris from my beloved Bordeaux. I genuinely thought Harlequins would just get steamrolled.
Yeah.
And I was so wrong.
I was pretty confident they were going to lose. But I thought, if you can score points, you can change the complexion of a game, you can damage the team mentally as much as anything else. Now, when I saw the team that Bordeaux were putting out without Jalabert, which, of course, is probably even bigger than Penaud.
I was going to say, the Jalabert was expected. They knew he was injured. Penaud was not expected.
Yeah.
And then you think, well, there is a chance. There's more than a chance here. And I think that's exactly what happened. They just took their chances as and when.
But the bit that I was surprised about was the poor performance of Bordeaux at the set piece, line out and scrum. And the counter to that is the dominance of Quins without Marler. Finn Baxter put in a performance for the ages.
He was brilliant, wasn't he?
Will Collier was even better.
Yeah, Will Collier was
superb. They were both amazing
as well.
But I just want to say, for the record, there's a lot of people who will be going, Will Collier, great, he should be playing for England. Well, he can't anymore because he's going to Castres this summer.
Is he?
Yes.
Oh, Jesus.
I know, but let the record show, on this podcast, we have been banging the drum for Will Collier for years.
Yeah, I mean, I think anyone that knows about scrummaging will say Will Collier. I was fairly late on the bandwagon to Will Collier, but I tell you who has been talking about him for a long time is David Flatman. David Flatman talks about Will Collier continuously and has done so, I think, maybe since the start of his podcast. And I think a lot of people that know about scrummaging have said that. I've kind of, if he's that good, he would eventually get selected. But this weekend, he was an absolute warrior. There was one particular phase of play where he sort of turned to the crowd like a gladiator. He's massive as well.
He's huge.
Yeah.
And bearing in mind, it's not like it's been an area of strength for England, but it's been an area where we've had significant weakness. It's probably the poorest position in England.
That and 12 are the two.
Just riddle me this. And this is a serious question. I'd love to know if anyone can give me a substantive answer. What does Will Collier not do that Dan Cole does do?
Turnovers?
Maybe. That's a legitimate thing Dan Cole can do.
He can do, but he's also a bit of a penalty machine on those as well. Like, it's a coin flip every time. Is he going to get a penalty? Is he going to give a penalty away?
It's not an anti-Dan Cole thing.
It's the nature of the jackal and the referee.
Will Collier probably can't play the straight man in a duo as well as Dan Cole can.
And to be fair, Will Collier's had a lot of experience with Joe Marler, so I don't know. Where he falls down there.
Yeah,
Joe Marler has to be the next guy to go to France, right?
With his tweet this week.
Well, that. But the other thing as well is, do you keep a very highly priced prop around when you've got Finn Baxter ripping up trees? That's what I would think.
And probably not. For Quins, Marlow, you would assume, will be worth less in his next deal than he is in his current. Therefore, he's probably worth his current deal to someone in France.
Joe Marlow's kids are of an age where And it's the same reason I thought, I think Courtney Laws really did want to stay in Northampton, is his kids are of an age and he's just taken a financial decision to go to Brive. But I think Joe Marler is very settled where he's living and his kids are young. I think he'll desperately want to stay, even if it means he takes quite a chunk less money.
I just think, I think he's going to... I think if I was Quinns, you've got to put sentiment to one side and club loyalty, because it's a professional sport now with a salary cap, and it's a difficult one, because I think not only has Joe Marler been a great Harlequin, he's probably been one of the... He probably is, at some point, an England great. You know, he's a maybe not great, but a seriously, seriously talented player for this generation.
Yeah, I think Quinns will get to keep him, and I think he'll
accept... a lot less cash.
I think he'll accept a lot less cash.
I mean, if they do
which
that,
is ideal.
It's perfect, isn't it?
Well, we did when we were, I won't say any numbers, but when we were having a couple of Heinekens in Paris with former Quinns director of rugby, there were some numbers mentioned about another England player who stayed at Quinns for substantially less money than his previous deal in Danny Kerr. And Danny Kerr, it's proven worthwhile for him, both for his family, but also because he's then got another, I don't know, 20 England caps over the last two or three years.
There is something, isn't there? I mean, so Danny Kerr would be a good example of somebody who is still very much in the...
That's 400K.
Someone who is very much in the English rugby public eye. I think that's important, because if he'd gone to France, so Dan Robson is a guy who's in France, not very much in the public eye for...
Especially not because Power... playing in the or not playing in Champions Cup, Jack Willis is in the public eye.
And the difference is with the older players, like Danny Kerr does a load of stuff for BBC. He does broadcasting left, right, and centre.
Yep.
He's very well known, and probably on balance, he probably could get a better monthly paycheck in France. But depending on where he wants to go with his career, staying in the public eye in England isn't a terrible idea.
Yeah, he's more valuable.
We've got an email here just to move us on to the actual substance of the game here. It's from Ali Thompson. And he says,
"Harley,
come all without, come all within. You'll not see nothing like the mighty Quinn. Come all without, come all within. You'll not see nothing like the mighty Quinn." That's a double negative. That means
you'll not see nothing. You will see something.
You will see something like the mighty Quinn.
There we go.
They need to have a word with that
they
themselves
really
about those
do.
Lyrics.
Yeah, particularly the average cost of education in the Quinn's crowd is not nothing. So, and by the way, not nothing is a double negative.
That's how
you use it, boys.
It's definitely something. This game then,
wild.
It was nuts, because both teams, they both scored pushover tries at various different points, but oh my god, some of the tries from both teams, like one or both of Will Porter's try. Deportier's try, the Biel Barry try.
The pick up off his laces.
The Boros try. Boros to get to the point where he scores the try. Just the whole thing, the Tyrone Green try. It was just... I've never seen anything like it.
No, I think...
Of that level, to be scoring those tries frequently.
Yeah. It was the ability of both teams to identify space and numbers consistently and not really worry about where they played from. Particularly Quinns, if Quinns are moving the ball, they're moving it for a reason. It is not empty-headed width for width's sake. I would just caveat it with this, though. I think the game was won probably in the first half when Quinns realised that the Bordeaux pack was terrible. In fact, they were borderline disgraceful. So the problem that they had, you mentioned the scrimmaging, which is undoubtedly a problem. But, teams sometimes lose scrums. That's fine. The line out, which is never acceptable. But the thing which really concerned me is the Bordeaux pack were not going forward. In fact, they were getting battered. And if your pack doesn't go forward, well, what are you left with? And I wonder if this was the Bordeaux recipe for success all along, which is have incredible backs. And when it's time to turn it on, you can turn it on. And Purnell will score you a bunch of points and Jalabert's ace. And they've just neglected that pack because they were garbage. There's no other word for it. They were utter garbage. Their prop... Not Ben Tamafuna, but the Georgian fella. I've never seen weaker carrying. Every time he got the ball, he was two yards behind.
It was like
the game.
A passive set-up to box kick.
Yeah, what
it?
Was he but, doing? Yeah. Go forward. It's not a difficult game. Go forward. I mean, he'd be the first guy that I took off. But all round, they looked weak, passive, borderline cowardly. I thought their pack was pathetic.
on the flip side, to give credit to Quinns, one guy who has suffered from the mantra that, oh, you have to be a certain size and shape, and that whole thing we talk about in English rugby, where there's so many good players that you end up going for the ones that look like the international player, quote-unquote. Mm-hmm. Will Evans.
Is ace.
Yeah. He's ace.
He was ace. So he got really badly injured, didn't he? He came back, he had a couple of games, got injured again. And every time he gets on a rugby field, he does something. He does something mesmeric. I don't know what it is. Some guys just... they've got wiry strength.
Well, it's just brave.
He is brave.
Like, actually, yeah, think about Jacques Berger, for example. One of our favourite ever players at any English club or any club, full stop. He wasn't the biggest, quickest.
Basically, big scaffolder.
He just had the biggest heart of anyone on that pitch. I think Will Evans has just got a giant heart.
He has, but he's also got an incredible sense of timing. Mm. Some of his turnovers are just incredible. And he must have some unbelievable man strength. You know, that ability just to wrestle people off balls. And he is some player. But you're right, I think he suffers from the fact that he's just not built like Tom Curry or Jack Willis, or, you know, one of the lads they look at and think, yeah, that looks like an international. And this is the England problem, because I think Will Evans as a Scotland player would be one of the best in the world. Will Evans as a Welsh player would be, probably have folk songs written about him right now.
On that, on the back row, I thought Cunningham South coming back in was ace as well.
Yes.
Until he blew up. He just gassed.
But it was first game back... Since he got injured, first game in whatever it is, five, 6 weeks.
To be fair, completely reasonable to gassed. Do you see how many carries he made in the first 10
minutes? Oh, 100%. I'm not knocking it.
Yeah. So no rugby and playing in that heat, at that ferocity.
21. Yeah. He's 21.
He is so strong. He is so strong.
I really think he is the real deal as well.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you.
And we've already touched on it, but Finn Baxter, so he's playing against a bloke who... At least, according to the stats, if you Google the weight of Finn Baxter and the weight of Big Ben, Benny T...
110 to 150, something like that?
Yeah, 116 to about 150. So he's giving away best part of 30, 35 kilograms in weight. And he's also... He's probably earning one-fifth of what...
Maybe one-tenth.
If Finn Baxter's still on an academy contract, he could legitimately be one-tenth
less. He could be on 45 grand.
Yeah, and
likely to be on 80K, I'd say, at 22.
22, yeah.
Minimum. Yeah. Let'd be a senior academy, let's say 80K.
Let's say he's 80 to 100K, which is good money. Ben Tamifanua, who was poached by Bordeaux from Racing 92, don't forget, will be one of the most... So he's not going to be... Owen Farrell or Sia Khaleesi money.
It'd be four, 500K. Yeah.
He'll be 400, 500K. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, he will be.
So could comfortably be five or more times earnings. And Finn Baxter came out comfortably on top in that battle.
Dispatched him.
Yeah. It wasn't just a scrimmaging, though. Like, his handling was great.
Yeah.
Just rampages around the park. That guy, I think it's fair to say that guy's got a future.
Definitely. Mm. Definitely.
I just wonder now, what Quinns are going to do in the next round, then how do you... I think the biggest problem you have when you face Quinns is nerves, because you're not entirely sure how you're going to beat them. So Bordeaux tried kicking away a lot of ball to start with, and they soon found out that kicking away the ball to Quinns was a horrible idea. But so then what do you do next? Do you hold on to the ball and let them turn you over when Will Evans sniffs it? I don't really know the answer. I think... You're going to have a pack like Leinster or Toulouse, which is unfortunate for Quinns, and you've just got to keep hold of the ball and keep grinding them down. I think that's probably your best option. I don't really know.
What we probably saw was Quinns playing about as well as Quinns can play, and Bordeaux not being at the level, anywhere near their level. That's probably what we saw, and that was enough, and that's not to take anything away from Quinns, but that was enough to mean that they came out narrowly in a win.
Yeah, but Quinns did this to Bath a few weeks ago, did they not?
Then they got absolutely spanked by Saracens as well.
Yeah, but that's because...
When you actually track Quinns' last four games, it's insane.
Well, theoretically, Bristol should have had a Premiership title over the last 5 years, but Quinns did Quinns' things. It's just what they do, isn't it?
28-0 down after 28 minutes.
Yep, and then they go and win. You know, they've got quite a history. I mean, Montpellier, I think, suffered at the hands of Quinns last time round, maybe 2 years ago, when they had a comfortable lead in the first leg and then got summarily battered in the second leg. They can just score depending on what day it is, and that's a hell of a superpower.
I'd say there's an equal amount of Quins went and won that, and just, and all they've got to do exactly the same against Toulouse. Just roll the dice, have a go, yeah, go out on your feet, swinging,
scoring twice. Early doors makes all the difference, doesn't it? Because it makes everybody doubt themselves. It makes fly halves think, is this the right strategy? You know, do we continue to kick? Do we play?
So I think there was a compounding issue. Yes, doubt creeps in, but Jalibert, Penaud on the field, I don't think the rest of the team at Bordeaux doubt themselves to the extent that they did. And that's where you struggle against Toulouse, because however bad Toulouse play, you would stand in, be one of the players in Toulouse. Let's say you're not one of the top players, you'd be looking around and going, there's Romain Ntamack, there's Antoine Dupont.
Mm-hmm. But the irony of this is,
there's Mal Vacker, and
I totally agree with you,
and Jack Willis.
The Red Baron effect. You know, you paint the aeroplane red so everyone can see that the best guy is still in the fight. You know, seeing those guys that you mentioned would make a difference if they weren't scoring. But they were scoring.
They were scoring
for fun.
But I think the doubt, because I think what we can say is, and this is, again, to take nothing away from Quins, Bordeaux were poor by their standards.
They were very poor.
They were very poor.
No, the backs were good. That's not fair. Certain
Their 10 had an absolute stinker.
I think that's because of the
pack. He was horrendous.
It could well be because of the pack. They scored some wonder tries from the backs.
Jalibert behind that pack playing the same would have done a lot better than Garcia did. He was great last week.
He was
dreadful.
Yeah. He was a tough
game. Shepherd's crooked at half time, and Bordeaux were instantly better with Luca at 10.
Yeah.
Yeah. That is true.
Poor old Garcia. Yeah.
Tough day at the office. As you said,
fair play to Quins. I really, really did not think. I thought they had as close to 0% chance as you can get in a 2-horse race, but they were good value for it as well. They thoroughly deserved it.
Why don't you move on to the other winning English team?
Well, just a second, because is this the case? So, just got an email from Alex, who's a Quins fan. He says, "Love the pod, blah. I've got a question on semi-final venues. Do they give the top-seeded teams an unfair advantage? I'm a Quins fan, and as unreal as this weekend is, I couldn't help noticing if Bordeaux triumphed as many thought, including yourselves, you're quite right, well done for pointing that out, they would have had a home last 16 quarter-final and semi-final. Likewise, Leinster had a home 16 quarter-final. They'll be travelling 10 minutes down the road to play at Croke Park for their semis." Well, Quins are going to be travelling to the stadium in Toulouse, where the football team play, where the rugby team regularly play.
Yep.
So the question, he says, is the competition loaded too heavily against challenging teams?
No. If you want the higher seed, be better.
Yeah, I can see why you'd think that. Like, you kind of think that the heroics from Quins and anyone who goes away to win should deserve a little bit more. But you've got to load it either your performance of the group stage or the performance of the in the knockouts, and it's loaded performance of the group stage.
Sorry to talk over you there, Phil, but there is another way to look at this, right? La Rochelle got battered this weekend, and I would say that one of the reasons they got battered was because of their travel schedule, which was unkind. But hey, they put themselves in that position by not winning games.
They lost to Leinster and to the Stormers in the group stages, therefore they've got to go the hard route.
Yeah, sorry, lads. Now, would it be fair to make Toulouse do that, who have not put... Well, Toulouse might have put a foot wrong, but you see what I mean? To put the best team who have not put a foot wrong and have them eliminated from the competition because, I don't know, it's deemed fairer in some way. No, not really. If you've not done that well, you're going to have the harder places to travel, and that's just the way of the world. And also, you would take away from the group stages, wouldn't you? So the seedings do matter.
Toulouse and Leinster, they are number one and number two ranked teams.
Yeah.
Neither of them lost a game. Toulouse got 4 bonus points from 4 games. So
that's quite good.
4 5-point wins. They couldn't do any better. Leinster only dropped 1 single bonus point.
Losers.
Away at La Rochelle.
Bottlers.
Away at the winners from last year. So those two teams have earned it.
Like, yeah. You wouldn't want those guys flying to South Africa and then Toulouse flying to South Africa and then to Dublin just so it's fairer.
Although I will say that, was it 3 years ago, 2021, when Ulster won all their group stage games.
And had to lose.
And got to lose because Toulouse had injuries and only just snuck through. But that sometimes it works against you. And if you want to be, if you want to be the best, you've got to beat the best. So, but yeah, I can't see a real justifiable argument to switch it around.
No.
There is...
Because what you're meant to get in the semi-finals is home country advantage.
Now, it is home country and city advantage for these two, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
But then, what are they going to do, make Leinster travel to Limerick or Cork or also Belfast? That would be ridiculous.
France is a bloody big country. Now, I don't know how easy it is to travel around France. Maybe you do, Sim.
Trains are outstanding, but, I mean, bottom line is you want to see packed stadiums.
You do. Exactly. And is it, how far is it for Toulouse fans to travel to, I don't know, Paris? I mean, I'm sure you can get there quite easily, but it's not the point, is it?
And also, don't forget the final last year when Leinster had home stadium advantage and playing in the Aviva, which is their, they play half their games there.
How did that go for them?
Ask Stuart Lancaster.
Yeah. God, they're going to win it without Stuart Lancaster.
Oh, we had some feedback on that, by the way, on the podcast last week. Basically, people sort of going, you're bang wrong. Stuart Lancaster arrived, revolutionised the way they play, revolutionised their attack, and in his first full season, they won the Champions Cup.
And then nothing else ever since.
But they won the Champions Cup.
I don't think he revolutionised anything.
He won the Champions Cup.
But he was only a senior
coach. And then
coach.
Won, what was it, four back-to-back URCs as well? Or whatever it was.
If you're telling me I couldn't win a URC with Leinster, you're nuts. I could win multiple URCs. I could win at least another Heineken Cup with Leinster. At least one more.
With this team.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, comfortably. I mean, it's like... Give me the Fijians in the Olympics. I'll at least get you a silver medal. Come on, boys. Come on.
So there has been more discussion on travel and schedules.
I was going to say this is a good time because you brought up travelling.
Good segue into it. So there's complaints. I've seen two of the high profile. So Austin Healey was complaining about it in comms in the Northampton game with the Bulls, which we will obviously touch on. And I think Stephen Jones as well.
There was an article in the Times from a source. The article was by Will Kelleher, who I know, and he's a legit journalist. So he's not going to say he's not going to say there's a source unless there was a source. Mm-hmm. A source suggesting that EPCR will launch an investigation into the Bulls,
rightly so,
for naming a weakened team for the quarterfinal against Northampton. Discuss.
Well, this is how it unfolded in my little world. I looked at the teams on Friday when they released, and I had in the back of my mind, because I'm no URC fan, I don't really know the teams, but we had the discussion of like Northampton are really good, they can score points, I'm liking their back line. And I think as you, Tim, pointed out, hang on a minute, you know, the Bulls are pretty good, listen to all these players, like
the back line with Billy LaRue and Kanan Moody and Kurt Liaransa and Johan Goosen and Ambrose Papier,
David Creel's pretty handy in the centre,
that is a serious backline.
So I opened up my Ultimate Rugby app. I mean, now I'm really torn. Is it Ultimate Rugby that's wrong? It's not been the first time. Is it me? Do I not know my franchises? Did Tim get it wrong on the podcast? I don't know. So I read this backline. I was like, who are these people? Like, none of them. I don't recognise any of them. And it's just a bit of a problem. Now, elaborating on that, what is the point in the Bulls if they're not taking the European Cup seriously? I understand that you could be in the top 14 like Lyon and you could be fighting relegation and you just need to stay in the top 14 because that is your bread and butter. The Bulls are not in that situation. The Bulls will be in the URC no matter what. They'll have a share of the revenue no matter what. Yada, 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 yada. This should be the pinnacle of what they want to achieve.
I'm glad you've drawn an equivalence because the initial thing, or glad you've at least made your argument there, because the obvious thing to say when there's been this uproar and people speaking out against the Bulls this week is, where was the complaints last week when Lyon sent a pants team to Pretoria to play the Bulls? And you've just said top four, they're battling for relegation in the top 14. And
we did complain about it.
Oh yeah, we did.
But also said there was
no articles in newspapers. Yeah, there was no talk of an EPCR investigation. Same goes. What about the teams that sent absolutely bobbins teams in the pool stages? When I was working last year, was it last year or the year before on the Champions Cup? Gloucester sent a legit C team to Leinster.
Yeah.
And there was no EPCR investigation. So I guess the obvious thing to say is, why is there an uproar now about this?
I think two reasons. One, they don't. The Bulls have no reason to forfeit this, really. Zero reason.
Really?
Well, you can give me in a second.
I'll give you an argument.
And I've got to remember the second reason, because just...
So, were you going to say it was top 14 relegation top 14. Thing, Leon?
Oh, yeah, no, sorry. The other one was, it's one of the biggest weekends in the rugby calendar, isn't it?
The quarterfinals
it's a
are more...
huge weekend.
Quarterfinals are more special than pools, especially if, like, if Gloucester have to go to... I can't remember the fixtures, but if they're going to Leinster and, say, one other higher seed than them, let's just say, I don't know, La Rochelle or Toulouse or sort of one of those teams, Bordeaux, then they've not got much chance. So you can't really blame them.
No. I will say this. Sale Sharks did it the right way back in the day. So Steve Diamond would fight like mad not to get relegated one season. And then next season, because he just avoided relegation, he's got a few more games which he can play with, he would usually get seventh place. And that was enough for a Champions Cup spot. And then next season, they would play in the Champions Cup. And then the same thing had happened. They would decline because of the rigours of the tournament. So it's a real thing. But even Sale, right, when they knew they had an uphill battle, because they had to be fit every single week. Remember when Toulon came to town, and they put out the absolute best team that they could, two games running, despite not having a chance and despite knowing that next year they could get relegated. Because what is the point in trying so hard last season to get to a competition which you're going to throw away? That competition is special, and I don't know why the Bulls did it, really.
Let me make the argument.
Please do.
For Jake White. So, and it's worth looking back at the last few weeks to just get a sense of where the Bulls are at. So, it was on the 23rd of March. 23rd of March, they played away at Dragons, and then they followed it up the following week with a game. Away to Leinster. Mm-hmm. So presumably they stayed in the UK for that period of time.
Yeah.
Travelled back on the 30th of March. Anyway, then they had a game in the Champions Cup the following weekend. Wait.
Who did they play 30th of March, Tim? Yeah.
They played Leinster away.
Oh, so is it Dragons, Leinster. Travelled back.
Dragons, Leinster, travelled back, played Leon at home. That was on the Saturday. They had to wait until the games were finished on the Sunday before they knew who their opponent was.
Okay.
At which point they could then book flights and things,
mm-hmm.
and they then travelled for this game in Northampton. In about 4 days' time, they play against Munster in Pretoria, which is an enormous game in the context of the URC and the battle for home semi-final spots. They play two games at home, then they would be back for Champions Cup semi-final had they beaten Northampton.
Okay.
So when you actually look, like, it's fine. One thing flying from Manchester to Nice, as you have done this weekend.
Yeah,
a couple of hours, and a 12-hour trip both ways. All of the logistical dramas in that. I think there is a fair argument. I don't think Bulls wanted to do this.
No, I agree. But they definitely didn't want to do it.
I think when you actually just look at last week they were in Pretoria, this week they'd be in Northampton, next week they'd be back in Pretoria playing against Munster. That in itself is mammoth challenge. But that's not just in isolation. Then there are games either side of that before and after, and the consequence could be they went bird in the hand, two in the bush. We have to beat Munster. We'd like to beat Northampton. We might end up shit in the bed and losing both. We'd rather just go all in on one, which is exactly what Leon did last week.
Yeah,
for the same reason. You saying that the URC league, there's no relegation?
No, there's
still home semi-final spots, which is massive when you have to travel 12,000 miles for a game.
I'm not going
to
say that Lyon being relegated from top 14 is an existential threat to their club, because it's not that big, but it's bloody big. You know, it's a serious, serious problem.
It's huge.
Right? Bulls do not have that threat. So that's the first thing I'll say. Second thing is, if I'm looking at that schedule and I'm looking at such terrifying fixtures as Dragons away, I might look at rotating my squad in a slightly different way. Particularly if I think, oh, Leinster, we're going to win that one. Maybe we are, maybe we're not. Jake White said it's important to rotate your squad, and I agree with him. And he's just dropped the ball here. He's thrown away a golden opportunity for the Bulls. I do not even see what the point of the Bulls is if they're not in the European Cup quarters and challenging.
Why
not throw away the group games?
So South African teams haven't got the 25-30 year history that we have as fans.
Well, but they know what they signed English. Up for.
Yeah, I know, but did Jake White sign up for this, or did the South African Union sign them up for this?
Jake White is nothing but an employee, and Jake White's job is to win two competitions. Now, you might say, just go and win the one. I disagree. I think it's the pinnacle of the European Cup is the pinnacle of Northern Hemisphere rugby. You know, if you want to prove yourself to be the best,
they don't have any history with it. So,
Then in that case, they should never have signed up for it.
Well, by the same token,
you could make the same argument for Lyon.
Lyon, get out of the competition. Gloucester last year, bugger off and don't play the game. There's a few things going on here. One, they expanded the number of teams in this year's in the competition. Mm-hmm. They've crowbarred in a round of 16 and quarter final back to back, and that is the biggest elephant in the room here. Round of 16 and quarter final back to back. Whilst I love watching my rugby and love there being two weekends completely jam packed with rugby, logistically, from a fan's perspective, from a player's perspective, it is ridiculous.
God, the penny's just dropped. I've got it. Are you playing to your South African base? Because I've seen our inbox at the moment, and there's a lot of very, very odd. You've grown a huge South African following. Are you appealing to your base?
No, EPCR, as I've just said, let's focus it in on this. I've talked about Lyon. I've talked about Gloucester last year. I've talked about, as you said, Steve Diamond did it a bunch of times with Sale Sharks. Just waved the white flag before the game was played.
No, he never did that. And that was my point. Because they wanted to be there. They thought that they worked so hard to get there.
Okay, maybe.
Until it was like... Yeah. I mean, they had done it like the last two games, but until they were mathematically out, they always put out the strong side. Okay. I thought that was important.
So the elephant in the room here, and this is the point, is as ever, the administration of rugby is awful. Like, one of the things that's happened this week is there's been talk of, in 2028, a World Club Championship, where what they will do is stop the Champions Cup at the quarter-final stage and suddenly form a new competition with eight teams from Super Rugby to make a Super World Championship. And there would not be a winner of the Champions Cup crowned that year.
What? Sorry, yes. What now?
Yes.
I missed that genius idea.
Crazy.
Well, so that's what they're going to be doing in 2028.
Huh?
It hasn't been officially ratified, but this is basically
good.
All the unions and all the leagues are going yes, and the reason they're saying yes is because they're seeing the pound signs.
What pound signs? Who's going to want to watch it? What pound signs?
Well, anyway, the theoretical
pound signs.
Yeah, yeah.
So as ever, so the back-to-back round of 16 and quarterfinals is a joke. It's a joke from a fan's perspective and from a player's perspective. It's ridiculous.
Well, so I'm torn with this because I think it works really well because of, like, we spoke before about having your club domestic, your club European or club regional,
that makes sense.
International, which I love. I've actually loved having the last two weekends. The stories flow. You don't need to look back on the league tables.
I totally agree with you.
However, you can't do it with South African teams.
And you can't do it with big Premiership, big URC games in the middle, on either end. Immediately before.
I just think it's the cost of doing business.
It is. It's very much, it's a trade-off.
I totally agree.
It's a total trade-off because you've got access to this 50 million rugby-mad market in South Africa, which people want. Like, for lots of good reasons, there's brilliant teams, massive families, and TV deals. The rugby needs all those things.
What do you... I've completely forgot.
I do take all your points on board, and they are important. The only thing which I don't really understand is they had to play the game. Why did they rest all of the Springboks?
Yeah.
They could have rested some of them. I would have taken that. Like, okay, yeah, you're playing it strategically. You want to keep some guys in reserve.
I reckon
had
Munster been playing this weekend, they might have gone differently. But Munster have just had a weekend off, and the game next week is massive. And I think there might be an element of, hold on, Munster are just going to be sitting up, putting their feet up while we're travelling for 24,000 miles.
But the Bulls could have beat Northampton. Yeah. And that is massive.
Yeah, no,
I mean, you look at full strength Bulls team and you think that could be the favourite here.
Yeah, no,
and if they don't have a history in the European Cup, well, they will do after doing Northampton and maybe doing a semi-final. Two games away from a cup there.
There is one. What's the mantra, just to round this point off from my perspective, what's the one mantra that the administrators of the game love to say but actually prove with their actions that it's pretty much empty words?
Oh, I have no idea.
The most important thing is...
Player welfare.
Player welfare.
Good old player welfare.
No. Cash. And that's why EPCR are upset, because they've been hoisted by their own petard. The greed...
It is cash, though. I mean, like...
The most important... Well, at least if they should be honest, say the most important thing is cash.
Yeah.
That's why we're annoyed at the Bulls.
Well, I guess the most
important thing is cash.
Well, I mean, if there's going to be a comforting side...
I don't mind if they say that.
There's going to be a comforting side of this story. Believe what people do, not what they say. And if they are thinking about cash, it makes me feel a lot better. but, yeah, okay, fine. Point taken. I think your point is probably better illustrated with what happened with La Rochelle this weekend. I mean, that's how hard it is. And, you know, that's what would happen to the Bulls. But they signed up for it. South Africa signed up for it. And you're two games away from a trophy. I have no sympathy for you, right? You send your best team, you put your best foot forward. Now, if you want to sabotage both competitions by sort of trying some clever rotation, fine, by all means do so, but to throw one of the competitions away, it's the greatest competition probably in world club rugby.
So if Jake White had brought his best team, what would you have done next Saturday against Munster?
They keep playing. That's what they're paid to do. You don't pay these guys nothing, right? They are paid to be world-class professionals. It is a job. You go and play.
And all,
scheduling 2 days, two full days travelling.
It's hard. I mean, no one said it's easy, but, you know, try being a bloody, I don't know, on-call 24-hour doctor or some such thing. Just get on with it. Stop whinging. You sat on a plane. Yeah, and they had to play it anyway. All right, and someone else had to step into their shoes and step on that field and get battered.
Sorry. Here is one final thing which I thought, okay, which...
Try fighting bloody in Afghanistan or whatever it is. It's just a job. Get over yourself.
Well, okay. Well, here's another thing. EPCR... at the start of the season, say to every single club entering the Champions Cup, please tell us your squad for the Champions Cup. Fill in 41 names here. Mm. I say EPCR then basically said, we think you need 41 players for a Champions Cup season. And you cannot then complain about what 23 players appear in a team. So if EPCR think it's so important to have the high quality of players for every single match, this is so important, give them... 28 names.
Yeah, maybe.
And then teams cannot do this.
Yeah, so I was going to go the other way with that. I thought you were going to say give South Africans 5 extra names.
No.
Just so they can...
I was saying, actually, like, again, judge you on your actions, not what you say. EPCR say give us 41 names and then whinge about which players you put out on the pitch from those 41. It was in EPCR's control about how strong or how weak teams could be. And this has happened many, many times before.
But there is also an element of, you know, you give people leeway and... they then take the piss. You know, I don't think in a million years that the organisers thought that someone's going to get to the quarterfinals of the world's greatest club competition and throw it away.
People have done it.
Well, in the quarterfinals,
not in the quarterfinals, but we haven't had South African teams in the quarterfinals.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, if that's how the South Africans behave, maybe we don't want them.
Well, I think what Phil just said to wrap it up is you cannot have this schedule with South African teams and expect it to work.
Yeah, you've got to have a break, which I would prefer it to be back-to-back.
But I think the NFL teams do something similar. I mean, maybe not...
17 games a season.
Yeah, it isn't the same extent. But look, they had a game against Lyon, which wasn't that difficult. They played the Dragons, for God's sake. So, you know, who cares? You know, the URC is not as tough a league. They don't have relegation. I'm disappointed. I see why people won't think it's justifiable. I do not. I think it's an app. In fact, I think the Bulls are an absolute disgrace, and I question what is even the point of the Bulls if they throw away a opportunity to win the greatest competition in club rugby.
Well, if they go and shit, if they shit the bed
in the URC,
if they shit the bed in the URC,
who gives a shit? Well, is it URC?
You brought up this last week. Yeah. The URC is a competition which has gained some traction in South Africa because one of the teams won it.
It's certainly better, but then
in the first year of the South African team's been in it. It was an all South African final, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was, and it was it Storms Bulls, I think. But then I think the same
Storms Sharks, maybe.
Yeah, same would apply if they won the European Cup. They could have made history, couldn't they, as the first South African team to do all the big European teams and had. You know, they could have been legends, but they decided to throw it away because they're cowards. Absolute cowards. They're pathetic.
One final point that's perhaps not quite that strong, but is against the Bulls and the way that they've done it, would be, remember in 2020, I think it was 2020, must have been, COVID lockdowns, some of the insane lockdowns, where the Argentina team, because of the quarantines getting into, I think it was Australia that they played.
Yeah. They won in New Zealand.
Well, they beat New Zealand for the first time. But I think I seem to remember the game actually being played in Australia. But they beat New Zealand for the first time. They hadn't been training. They've been locked in their hotel rooms, but been given
2 weeks, wasn't it?
Fitness programs, and so they'd managed. So being locked in a plane for 12 hours is not perfectly conducive to playing your best rugby. But if you're intelligent, I think there are ways around it. You can train and maybe be in fighting shape to play two games of rugby with that much travel. It must be possible.
So do we all agree? Oh, God, imagine not wanting to play. What does it say about the culture of that club that you don't want to play? I think that's absolutely pathetic, actually. I'm thinking now, someone gave me the opportunity to play any quarterfinal. Oh no, mate! You go. I'll stay here in South Africa.
I understand. I understand why people are disappointed. I think you're flippant in how easy you think travelling and playing elite rugby is.
I don't think either is easy. I've been to Nice. I really struggle with it. I do not think any of these things are easy. I have nothing but respect for professional players.
I don't think. I genuinely don't think it would be reasonable, and I don't think any team would do this. Travel. I don't think any English team, Irish team, or ever would Saturday to Saturday travel, or Saturday to Saturday to Saturday, back to back to back, travel there and back across the world twice and play a game 4 days after they arrive in another country, then travel back and then play another game.
France is no small place. And
oh, come on.
It is not. You know, if
it's 2 hours top to bottom in a plane.
If you're in a plane, of course.
It was 2 hours top to bottom in
a plane. And also, it is
4 hours in a train.
It is a far, far harder league. It's night and day. We're not talking like the Child's League of the URC.
And what do France do? They put their strong teams out at home, and they send the backup team to most away games.
Yeah, but not
that's why they only win 50% of the game.
I guess your argument would be, well, yeah, but they don't have the history. But La Rochelle, bless them, they tried and they got a hiding. And I respect them. I respect them. Damn sight more than the Bulls that hid away in Pretoria. Oh God, that's pathetic. The more I think about it, the more pathetic.
I think you're being deliberately
provocative. Now.
Provocative. Now.
I think you're playing to your South African base.
I think.
Why have you got a hat saying "Make Bulls Great Again"? Where did that come from? I've just noticed it.
I worked at that game last year, Leinster against Gloucester, as I say, and it was a Gloucester C team in a Champions Cup pool game.
I'm not into that either.
It happened in loads of them. Well, this is the problem that an EPCR, I think they've forced this situation themselves. They wanted the South African teams in, and the schedule back to back is almost impossible. Also, the pool stage means you can only win one. You can win one game and get into the quarterfinals. So, loads of teams in the pool stage put out bobbins teams
in the pool stage. Yeah.
But it's the greatest competition in the world. Why wouldn't you want to win every game?
Why wouldn't you? That's a great question. Well, if you like to be relegated, I see it. But the Bulls don't have that problem at all.
Okay,
we should talk a little bit about Northampton.
Yeah, I was going to say Northampton won the game, didn't they?
And actually, this game, because the Bulls going into half time when it was 28-22.
Story of the weekend, that, with some of the games, wasn't it?
I was.
Can you imagine in the huddle with, like, for the Bulls, what you'd be saying I mean, you'd have a team talk within a team, though, wouldn't you? The lads don't care about us. They've left us here to die. No one gives us a chance. Not even our own club gives us a chance, which is why we're here and not the good players. Let's show everyone.
Yeah, I mean,
that's where you'd go. That's
Let's put up this article with EPCR saying that they've accused us of throwing in the towel.
100%.
We'll show
and
them.
This is exactly
plenty of other journalists.
I kind of wish it. I don't wish that they'd win, because then the other players would get the cowardly players that stayed at home who then get the credit of playing
the semi-final. You're being deliberately provocative.
Well, they would, wouldn't they? Oh, look, we made a semi-final. No, you didn't, you coward. You stayed at home.
They didn't play brilliant in the first half, but they stayed in the fight, and then it just all got away from them remarkably quickly in the second half.
Well, there does seem to be a little bit of a trend in this. Because every game other than the Harlequins game, which was an absolute ding-dong from start to finish, seemed to be relatively competitive up until half-time. One team breaks, they really break.
Yeah. That is the story of the weekend, actually. Just the sheer number of points that were scored on La Rochelle, Bulls and Exeter once they broke. It was then a free-for-all feeding frenzy.
Yeah. And this could be down to inexperience, because Bulls, inexperienced team, and inexperienced in this competition. And Exeter, a very inexperienced team.
La Rochelle, though.
Yeah.
They are not inexperienced.
But, you know, you can't expect to travel like that, can you?
Just, it's inhumane.
That was as good as I've seen Leinster play. We can come on to that in a minute. But Northampton, it's hard to judge. But from what I saw, just awesome attack. It's so good to watch.
It was good having Austin Healey in comms on this.
He was very good.
Because he was picking up things. Yeah, as he always is. But he sees particularly the backline moves slightly differently. And some of the pointers, like the repeat plays with different outcomes, which I particularly
like. I love that, yeah.
Like,
he did talk about a lot.
He talked about that with Vesti. And then you had the 9 to 10 or 12, because it different, with 9 looping around the back. And then you either have the inside or the outside option and running identical plays multiple times and hitting different men, and sometimes it gets red, sometimes it creates beautiful tries.
Yeah. I'm not sure I like Freeman playing at 13. He's awesome.
It allows you to get just more speedsters on the pitch in one regard.
Well, there is this, but it just clouds the England picture some more, doesn't it? Because England do not need another 13. They need clarity on the wings.
Yeah, and I think they've got that on the wings. I think Freeman and Faye Wabosso are the two boys. They're 1 and 2 on the wings, 11 and 14,
I think you just kind of crystallised like English rugby. Like, it's interesting. Well, actually, English and Irish rugby versus French. When you look at Leinster, Northampton, Toulouse, the best attacking teams in their respective countries, and the way you just described Northampton, they have shapes and patterns that they run, and they can hit different options.
Yes,
and you put the decision in making in Finn Smith's hands, and he's getting better and better.
Yeah, and Mitchell's hands
and
as
Mitchell
well.
As well. Yeah, 100%. But it's based around structure. There's always a structure. There's always a shape, and I think Leinster are exactly the same.
Very much so.
Very intricate. So. It's always a shape, always a structure. Yeah, they might hit different options. They might change it up. They might have a surprise every now and again. Whereas Toulouse, it's very different. They just kind of, I think they're much more in the moment and reactive. They actually just react to what is in front of them. When the picture changes, what they do changes.
Yeah, there was.
And they just kind of, it's just kind of
random genius.
Well, there was. Yeah, it's probably not random. They're probably a coach
genius.
Who goes into it. But
just
yeah,
genius.
Just.
There was a description of French rugby versus the rest of the world's rugby. I'm sure it was from one of the guests on Rugby Dungeon many years ago, who described it as most other nations, so England, Ireland.
I think it
Wales,
was Benjamin Kayser.
Might have been Kayser.
Benjamin Kayser.
South Africa, particularly. They see rugby as a science, whereas French see rugby as an art.
Yeah, it was Benjamin Kayser.
And it was in part talking about the strength and conditioning or historic kind of lack of it in France, which obviously they've very much got
Hang
over
on,
that.
Was this the same interview as people? Someone was saying something about the musculature in the French public in particular is not as defined as in the British public, because gym culture has not taken over. And they led on to talk about the rugby.
I don't...
is not gym culture. It's led by the art of rugby, not the science of rugby.
There's definitely that phrasing, but I can't I can't recall the comparisons with the civilians.
It might have been better.
Some French teams are much more structured than others.
And Bordeaux, when they're playing their best stuff, some of their backs moves are... Now, they can do both.
They do both.
When they were playing their best stuff, which yesterday they were not.
And Toulouse have shapes and structures that they go to at times, but they're at their very best when they all just react to what's happening. And what's frightening about them, sorry, because it's about Northampton. Yeah. It's just quite interesting the way you describe Northampton. You're absolutely right. What Toulouse uniquely do is when they make a line break, it's just that they just flood it, and all of a sudden it's a four on one. How many times do you see a support runner just take an easy pass past the fullback to run in under the post? It's amazing. But Northampton, the structure, and so I think with the players that they've got, maybe they can be the English team that will bust out of that English mould and actually.
Well, I think they're all because it's a young team. There. As well. I mean, if you watch Mitchell play, he'll happily pick up the ball from the base of a ruck and run up and down the line looking for a gap.
You're absolutely right about him.
That's a weird thing.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, and there's a break he made second half on the narrow blind side.
Yeah,
it actually came to nothing in the end. Yeah. But it was one of those where you're like, what on earth is he doing here? Oh. That's what he's doing.
Yeah, you're right, actually. Mm.
Well, not to quote Jacko Willink anytime soon, but discipline will set you free. And I think that's exactly what happens with structure. It's a structure that...
Do you know another phrase from the Marines that was quite handy in CrossFit? What is it? Slow is smooth, smooth is fast.
Yes. Is that from the Marines?
I think it's from the Marines, yeah.
Oh, I use that all the time.
That's good. I like that.
Yeah, it's very, very, very true. Mm.
So well done, Northampton. One positive thing that we've commented on this at previous times this season as a marked change in Northampton from previous seasons. Their scrum was very good.
About to mention Manny Iogun
and Trevor Davidson and the reserves who came, Waller obviously very experienced, but they were putting balls under all sorts of pressure.
Davidson, Collier, what were England worrying about with their tight head props?
Exactly. Davidson's been great, hasn't he?
What have they been doing for the last few years?
I believe. It does make you wonder, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So just back to Collier. Allegedly, I need to remember to talk about this. Allegedly, Rowntree was after him for years, but something just wasn't quite right.
I blame, and I know I'm a historically an Eddie Jones fan, I blame Eddie Jones because he went for the... So it is undeniable that Kyle Sinclair has a better all-round skill set than Will Collier or Dan Cole or Trevor Davidson or Paul Hill, who looked in good shape when he came on. Mm. Any of those boys, bigger-bodied boys. And Sinclair, England spent a lot of caps and a lot of time on Sinclair, who wasn't quite disappearing this year. Yeah, he wasn't quite good enough at his primary... He's undoubtedly better around the park, cutting lines, handling out the back.
He's more...
But his primary job wasn't quite as good as any of those other boys.
You're absolutely right. He is more rounded, but on the same token, I don't want my accountant to know poetry. I just want him to count.
I don't want my tight head prop more rounded. I want my tight head prop more rounded.
Oh. Yes. Yes.
Exactly.
Which is the return of Dan Cole. Anyway. Manny Ogan's been great. Is it Heffernan, the reserve that they've got? Not reserve, but the...
Oshan
Heffernan, who's very good. So to be keeping him out of the team, I think, is impressive. Mm. And, you know, front rows, actually, both Northampton and Quinns, a lot of, for all the free-flowing rugby which we're crediting them for, which is undoubtedly something which has happened.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store.
And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
It's the front rows that have really stood up.
We'll go through that too. Alex Coles is playing really well as well.
Alex Coles, brilliant. Yeah. My boy Langdon. Absolutely nailing his his line-out throws now.
He is looking good.
Big he's great, isn't he?
Yeah.
I told them at the time, this boy is great. This boy is great.
50 cap international.
Yeah, but no one listened.
Yeah.
We can let him go. No, you can't.
They were class. And they've got Furbank to come back and...
Well, James Ram looks all right.
He looks good.
Yeah, well, yeah. Furbank and Ludlam both came off the bench, didn't they?
Crikey.
Which is...
This is it, I mean...
And they got Pearson not even... involved because he's injured.
Yeah, it's got to be the Northampton. This is their year.
Yeah, it's their opportunity to win it, isn't it?
It is.
This
is their Laws and Ludlam there. One last hurrah.
Yeah.
But then some of the other guys will only be getting better. Like Eogan and Smith.
And they're missing, they're going to lose Moon.
Freeman.
Is it Moon?
Slito. Yeah, Moon's going to Bayon.
Yeah.
My beloved Bayon.
And Waller's retiring.
Yeah, okay.
So, I think this is their window of opportunity. They've got to win now.
Definitely. Shall we talk about Leinster? Because we were talking about free-flowing but structured rugby.
That's Leinstertainment. I'll tell you what, that was good.
Leinstertainment, very good. They were good?
They were really good.
That was as good as I've seen them.
And I thought, in the first half, where they butchered a couple of tries, where James Lowe gets held up by... Where was it? It might have been Hastoy. From 3 yards out.
Yeah, it was.
You think, maybe it's going to be lightning striking twice. They get... a dangerous amount of, what was it, 13 or 14 or...
17 points up at one point, much like last year. And then... Yeah. And then
dangerous lead,
and then La Rochelle
points.
Immediately scored.
Yeah.
So, this is actually quite easy for me to work out. Otherwise, this could have been a nightmare. So, my nightmare scenario is that Racing are still in the competition going into semis, and also Leinster are going into semis. This would just be... This would be mind-blowingly poor. Leinster getting to semis now post Lancaster, as I mentioned before, is kind of a big deal, and it's just which storyline do I like more? Leinster being bottlers, which I'd like to keep for a couple more years going, or Lancaster being dreadful at his job. One of those two things. If I could have both of them, great, but I think I'd prefer Leinster not to go any further. And I just don't know how you beat them, because you're right, Tim, they looked sensational. I can't think of... Unless you have another version of Leinster who's slightly better.
Now, the two English teams travel away. Harlequins travel to Toulouse. Northampton travel to Leinster.
Croke Park.
Yeah. Yes.
Is it?
Yeah.
Croke Park.
Wow.
There hasn't been a rugby game there since 2007.
Yeah, that's exciting.
That's cool.
Not great for TV, though. Too far away from the pitch. So, because the dimensions of Gaelic football or whatever the sport that they play there.
The Gaelic sports. It's the home of GAA.
Right, there you go. Then that thing they do. The crowd is very far back, so you've got these massive touchlines. So on TV, it does look a bit funny.
I when that England game happened, that was 2007, yeah. Wasn't it?
But I think it's a sense of history which really carried that through.
Oh, well, it was the fact that people got killed by the...
Hill
16.
Yeah.
Is it called Hill 16? Because 16 people died. Yeah. 16 people were killed, and it was at the... Was it the Orders of the King's horses or something like that?
No idea.
A long time. I think it was something like that. There were soldiers on horseback.
I'm not really...
They're under orders by the king, I think. So it's a very... Like and also, because it was an English sport... And not an Irish rugby's an English sport. It was decreed like that no English sport will ever be played.
Yeah, there are
at this ground.
There are very few subjects that I'm not willing to touch. Irish history is one of them. I just don't get. I just don't talk about it. I don't think about it. I don't comment on it. Whatever they say, yeah, fine. I will take that. Which is why it's historic that they play there. Yeah. But for TV, it's not a great venue.
Okay.
Here's a little bit of Irish history that you might comment on. You just mentioned Ireland versus England 2007, Croke Park.
Yep.
Give me the England team.
That was
I'll tell you the scoreline, actually.
Was it 2007, did you say?
2007. It was a historic victory for Ireland. 43-13, a 30-point victory, marking England's worst defeat in the tournament up to that point.
So basically, who would have been in the Six Nations 2007? So
Martin Currie started, what position?
Second row.
Eight.
Number eight.
Oh, damn it.
Did start number eight.
It's trying to be a bit...
Phil Vickery.
Phil Vickery started. Steve Borthwick, not in the 22.
Andrew Sheridan.
Not in the 22.
So Martin Currie, Lewis Moody.
Yeah. Yeah.
No.
No, okay.
Not in the 22.
One of the Sanderson boys.
None of the Sanderson boys.
This is embarrassing. What's going on here?
Sean Perry. No.
Yes.
Well done.
Yes. Reserve scrum half.
Great.
Wearing the number 20 shirt.
Oh, and that. So Matt Dawson wasn't still around, was he?
Andy Gummersall.
No.
Oh.
Okay.
Not
Richard Wigglesworth. No. He was too young then.
Yeah, he might have. He won it because he played in 2005.
Peter Richards.
Peter Richards, no.
Charlie Hodgson.
Charlie Hodgson, no.
Ellis, scrum off.
Harry Ellis.
Nice, well played.
There we go. All right, so then...
So missing quite a few. Josh Lucy, was he still around? No.
Josh Lucy, yes. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
He was on the right wing.
So there's a chance then Jason Robinson would be in there.
He wasn't in there, but yeah, there was a chance because this is the World Cup year.
Yeah.
6 months before the World Cup.
So, hang on, let's all settle down a second. So,
Tindall. Mark Cueto.
Cueto, no.
Ollie Barkley,
no.
It's not Mike Catt.
So you did say Tindall, didn't you?
Tindall, yeah.
Tindall playing 13. This is a big centre partnership.
Oh, Jamie Noon.
No, bigger.
Andy Farrell.
Correct.
Wow. Okay. Interesting.
Andy Farrell. So who's a fly? So Mike Catt played fly half. Ollie Barkley played fly half.
So it wasn't
Johnny Wilkinson also played fly half.
Johnny Wilkinson did play fly half.
Yes.
So Johnny Wilkinson. Andy Farrell, Mike Tindall. That's pretty meaty, that.
Yeah.
With Josh Lucy on wing or fullback?
Josh Lucy on the right wing.
Okay. And not Mark Cueto, left wing. Paul Sackey.
Not Paul Sackey.
Hugo?
Not Hugo.
No. This is before the 2007 World Cup. This is
the other two in the...
Matthew Tate.
Matthew Tate was number 22.
Okay.
Hang on, 2007. Okay.
So the other two...
Ben Cohen?
No. The other two back three are tough to get. We might be better moving on to...
No, we are not moving on. James Simpson Daniel.
No.
Leslie Vinicolo.
No.
Good one. Tim, good. No, not him. I'm just trying to think of the wingers in the Premiership at about that time.
I'm thinking second rows now.
You go for second rows.
You go for second rows.
I'll put up some wingers.
Ben Kay.
No.
Tom Voice?
No.
Chris Jones?
No.
Steve Borthwick?
No, already had him, but no.
Deacon,
which one?
Lewis.
Lewis Deacon.
Yeah.
Second row, good one.
One of the three second rows.
Simon Shaw? Bench.
Not Simon Shaw, although he did play in the World Cup that year, didn't he?
Tom Palmer?
Tom Palmer was on the bench.
Very good, mate.
Good shout. You need two of the back rows. You need the other starting second
row. Mears.
Lee Mears was on the bench.
The other start, we've not...
Matt Stevens.
No.
Are we missing a starting second row?
You're missing a starting second row. You're missing...
Deacon and...
Two props.
Tom Palmer. Oh, Tom Palmer's on the bench, right?
Tom Palmer's on the bench, yeah.
Perry Freshwater
started loose head prop. Good shout. So you're not missing that many now. In the pack, you're missing six and seven.
Okay, Michael Lippmann.
No.
Six and seven.
Missing... Six and seven.
Okay, it's not Lewis Moody. It's not... Crikey.
Is it obvious? Will we kick ourselves with some of these
six
games?
Six, you will kick
Joe Worsley.
Joe Worsley.
Yeah.
Joe Worsley. Yeah, Delalio played in the World Cup, didn't he?
But yeah, he did.
He's not playing here. Seven. We've spoken about his brother recently, actually. His less famous brother. Although we probably talk about his brother more on the podcast.
Crikey, who's... It's not. We've done Sanderson, so it's not him.
Not him.
Not Pat Sanderson.
His brother was a second row.
Tom Wood. No, his brother was a second row. Will Johnson.
His brother is less famous.
His brother's a second row.
Yeah, we spoke about him about 3 weeks ago when Tim was in France. 3 or 4 weeks ago.
Huh? Oh, Magnus Lund.
Magnus Lund.
Oh, yeah, because I had dinner with Eric Lund.
Yeah. The other second row you're missing, a classic English second row.
Oh, hang on.
Oh, we got Tom Palmer Ben Kay. And...
Not Ben Kay.
No.
Grucock.
Hard man, yeah, Grucock.
Danny Grucock.
Danny Grucock.
You're missing the starting hooker.
And...
not Steve, so Steve Thompson was injured at this point, wasn't Thompson, he?
And the scrum half we're missing as well, aren't we?
No, you've got the two scrum half, Sean Perry and Harry Ellis.
Oh, okay,
you're missing the 11
the
and
winger,
the 15.
11.
Phil Greening. It's not too late for Phil Greening, is it?
It is too late for Phil Greening.
Richard Cockerell.
Not Richard Cockerell. Similar club.
Oh, Dorian West.
Not Dorian West. Well, same club as Cockerell.
George Shooter.
Yes.
Ah.
Reserve prop is the same club again.
Jason White. No, not Jason White. Jason White's the flanker for Scotland, yeah.
Yeah, you're missing the... the reserve fly half...
11. Toby Flood. Taolupe Flood.
The reserve flanker, who was at one point the great hope of English rugby.
Tom Rees.
And you're missing the two...
11 and 15.
Ian Bolshaw.
No.
Okay.
Dan Luger. No, he wasn't.
Dan Scarborough. No and no.
Chris Patton. No, Chris Patton only had one cap and it was against Barbarians. So it's not him.
One of these guys only had two caps.
Okay.
One of them got 14.
Hang on. The fullback from Gloucester at the time. What the hell was his name? There's a fullback from Gloucester. It's going to kill me.
There was
a fullback from Gloucester. And
there was a fullback from Gloucester.
Give me his first name.
JB knew him.
No. Don't tell me his first name. What the hell was his name? Not Forrester. Foster. No, Forster. No, what was his name?
The other one is easier. The other one got 14 caps for England.
14,
the other one.
Right, so we've got the
very talented
Gloucester who are coming. James Forrester.
He's number eight.
Yeah.
James Forrester. Oh, for God's sake. No.
You're thinking of Jack Forster, the prop.
No, I'm not thinking of him.
He also played for Gloucester.
I'm thinking of Narraway now. It's not him, obviously.
Dad's a butcher.
It is. Oh, this is going to absolutely eat me alive.
So... to get your juices flowing...
Tell us what club.
So the other winger... So you've got, the fullbacks from Gloucester. Yeah. The other winger...
Miles Benjamin.
Played for multiple clubs and won... He won a lot.
Marlon Yard.
Nope.
Marlon Yard didn't win
before,
much.
Marlon Yard's time.
Isn't it?
Although he did play for
Quinns. He has got some accolades, though, but he hasn't won much.
He did play for Quinns. But he's more... I think he's more famous for the club he went to after Quinns.
Chris Ashton.
No.
Oh. After Quinns.
But he did play with Chris Ashton.
Ah, what?
And he was not.
I can tell there'll be people shouting at the podcast now.
He
I apologise.
In this part of the world as well, he went to Lim High School.
David Strettle.
Strettle.
Yeah, he won loads.
And he, yeah,
went to Claremont with.
Oh, did he end up in Saracens?
With Benders.
Saracens.
Yeah, he was at Saracens.
In two stints in Saracens.
Yeah,
Saracens.
Who is this fullback?
So fullback, two caps for England.
James,
131 appearances for Gloucester.
Between
2004.
I know exactly who it is.
And
he's tall.
He's
tall,
about 6'3". Yeah, pretty rangy.
Oh, I can see him. And do you know why I can see him as well? Because we had an article written about us in one of the papers, and it was him. His picture was. Above it, and I can't remember what the hell his name was.
An article written about us?
Yeah, like a podcast that you should listen to.
It might have been.
Was it a different fullback?
No, I think it is the same fullback. Gloucester, he was a one club man that never played anywhere else. Played with Simpson, that played in that era with Simpson.
Yeah, I know. You have to tell me. James
Hold on, I'm just going to. Oh, yes, you'll totally kick yourself. I think he's a teacher now.
Is it James Samuel?
He got injured. He got injured, and I think he became a teacher. And he had
Director of sport, yeah. Cheltenham College.
Cheltenham College. He had a slightly receding hairline.
Yeah, blondish hair.
And wasn't letting it go. He didn't go, and there wasn't turkey hair, wasn't a thing at that point. And he didn't shave it off. I can't remember what's his first name?
I want to say it's James.
It's not James.
It's not James. It's like not. I can't remember his first name, but I've looked it up and I know the surname.
Is it Forstall?
No.
No, it's not an F.
Oh, God.
His initials are OM.
Oh.
Shares a last name with a famous Gloucester number 8.
Ollie. Say it.
Ollie Morgan?
Yes.
Is it? Oh.
Correct. So we use that to distract us from the potentially devastating nature of Irish politics.
Yes,
or
well
Irish
done.
History.
Well done.
There we go.
Ollie Morgan. Oh, kill me.
In the game, we've not really touched on Toulouse Exeter. Exeter should be very proud of that first half performance, but they just. A couple of times in the first half, and then many, many times in the second half, they just were found wanting out wide. They just, Toulouse managed to find so much space out wide.
The context is important. As we've talked about before, Exeter are apparently £2.2 million under the English salary cap, which is significantly below the French salary
cap. About a third of the French salary cap.
Which Toulouse will be maxing out.
Yes.
And when you've got a team that... Blair Kinghorn's done his job for the day. Let's take him off and bring on Tom Aramos. Let's take off Pietro Malvaca and bring on Julian Marchand. It's just unreal.
Yeah.
And you've
bring
got...
Bring off Rory Arnold and bring on Thibaut Flamont.
Whereas, who are we bringing on, Rob? Zach Wimbush, last year's Exeter University centre. It's incredible what they've done. To get to the last eight in Europe is remarkable.
It really is. And they should be very, very proud. And all those players will be better for that experience.
Yeah. For that performance, they need to be investigated by EPCR. No, joking. The fact that it was 17-16 at half-time is amazing.
Absolutely remarkable.
But let's just talk about the way Toulouse attack. It's just mesmerising, isn't it?
Yeah. And it almost doesn't matter where Dupont is standing and Entomac is standing. They just, much like Bordeaux did when they pushed Luku out to 10, although with far less success... They just kind of know how to play. And kind of like Ulster did with Nathan Doak starting at fly half. Again, that was with much less success than Toulouse. They're just so good. And then you've got Costes in the centre, I really like.
He looks class, doesn't he?
Yeah.
That little chicken wing offload out the back to Malia.
And he put in some nice hits again. And then obviously Peter Aki is dangerous. Obviously Labelle and Malia are phenomenally dangerous. And then the pack is just international after international after international. And all playing phenomenal.
They are built the right way. I know you don't want to see a Leinster-Toulouse final, but...
Yes, I do. Yes, I do.
Oh, do you? Oh, you do? I thought
so. It's, God,
it's,
yeah.
It's funny, because in the World Cup, the one final I didn't want to see was South Africa-New Zealand.
Yeah.
Because... We've seen it. We know they're the best two teams. They've got all the... We've just seen it too many times. This, Leinster-Toulouse, they are the best teams for a reason. They have got the most trophies for a reason. And they're both playing just about the top of their game.
I tell you what, it would be hard for me to support a team more than I'd support Toulouse.
Do you think this
you're just going to pick them as your team as well? Why don't you just pick them as your team as well?
I do like them.
Oh, is it Phil? Is it your beloved Bordeaux? It's your beloved Bordeaux, my beloved Bayonne, and your beloved Toulouse. Just own it, JB. Just be a glory hunter. Just do it.
That really
outside
is a glory
sale,
hunter.
I don't really like supporting teams. Don't really like...
What about your beloved Benetton? Have you just ghosted them now?
Yeah, I'm not bothered.
I do have to say, though...
Now that Dean Budd's retired.
Exactly.
So, watching that game, that phenomenal game, Harlequins against Bordeaux, and I know I'm kind of notionally a Bordeaux fan, I found myself wanting Harlequins to win. Mm. Just because I know the players so much. We watch them week in, week out. We are English rugby fans. There are many, many English rugby stars in that team. I feel a bit guilty for saying it, but I wanted Quins to win.
Turncoat. But fair. Could we just talk about Jack Willis for a second? Because you already mentioned that the English Joe Marler tweeted that this rule has to go.
After Bill Sweeney confirmed it will not
Bill Sweeney confirmed it will not go. We talked about this last week and we made our points clear. It was interesting but that Joe Marler said that. But Jack Willis, that guy is...
great, isn't he?
As an England fan, I'm completely torn because I love seeing him play for Toulouse.
Mm.
I want to see him play for England, but you want I also don't want to not see him playing for Toulouse.
And he seems incredibly Toulousian, doesn't he?
Well, he does. He has got better.
Yeah. I love, when a player is good, but then you put him in a surrounding with other immense players and he just becomes world class. And that's just what's happened here. Like, he fits in so well. He's highly, highly regarded. Well, yeah, it's awesome.
I was thinking about that that principle earlier in the weekend as well, because I was watching my other beloved team, Ulster, battle combatively in the first half and then get absolutely smashed in the second half by Clement and specifically Paseli Yato and Soakula.
Yeah, big
those
boys.
Two were phenomenal. But I'm watching Stephen Kitsoff, double World Cup winner, player, one of the most important players on one of the best teams of all time, and kind of just looks average in that Ulster team.
Mm.
And sometimes it's the environment that you're in and the play, and sometimes just playing with lots and lots of the best players in the world makes you look really, really good.
Well, let's just revisit this again in the context of Will Collier, because I think there's something interesting to be said here, which is maybe if you're just a component part of an excellent team, you can get away with just one thing, and that looks like exactly what's happened with Kitsoff. Maybe just England are not good enough to support the excellent ability of Will Collier scrimmaging with everything else. Because, you know, when you've got Peter Steph the Toy and just name everybody
Sia Khaleesi.
Else. Not him. Quagga Smith.
Marlon and Etzebeth and Mostert.
Yeah. You just need to push hard Yolande going forward.
Che, Marks, Mbenambi.
Yeah. Not bad, is it? Yeah. Not bad. You just need to push hard. And maybe in Ulster, he needs to do things more than push hard, like hit rucks and carry ball and do things which...
which he can do all those things, but... compared to, say, Andrew Warwick or someone who's played the last few years who is on, I don't know, a third or a quarter of what Kiss, you aren't getting 4x. He's still a phenomenal player, but he's not enough of a difference maker to make
He's back home to South Africa, is he not?
Yeah, he's going back to Stormers.
Yeah.
After 1 year.
Christ, I bet. I never thought I'd hear those two compared. Andrew Warwick and Stephen Kitsoff. There you go.
Number one jersey in Ulster.
Yeah. Do you want to talk about the women and the balls that they're going to use?
We need to talk about that. I did just remember there was a bit of news that we not touched on, which was TNT Sport. They've signed two deals recently that we've not spoken about. One was last week where they have signed up for the Autumn Internationals for 2 years.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which is interesting. And good, I think. Although it's perhaps less accessible than Prime because lots and lots of people have Prime. That was only 2 or 3 weeks after they announced.
And the TNT app is unusable. Like, literally, for me, I can't use it.
I use it.
Do you?
Fine, yeah.
We'll have to have a chat later about how you actually work the damn thing.
BT Sport app was ace.
The BT Sport app was good. Worked.
I use the Discovery Plus app.
Mm.
So you have to use the Discovery Plus app, which you just sign in with your TNT account.
Yeah, I don't even know what my details are.
There was one thing that pulls those two stories you just mentioned. You're right to say the broadcasting. Was there something else you were going to mention?
Yeah, because 3 weeks ago or 4 weeks ago, to virtually no fanfare, there was an announcement that TNT Sport have extended their Premiership rugby deal, their TV deal for that. It's showing more games.
Every game.
But no announcement on numbers, on what it's worth, which, to me, I can only assume that it is a drop in...
Flat or
down. Yeah. Because there wasn't any competition, unlike when when the French TV deal in France was announced 2 or 3 years ago, and there were three broadcasters competing for it, so they got a 20-30% increase. I'd be surprised. There might have been someone willing to like Sky or maybe not even Sky.
I can't see Sky being interested.
Yeah, someone might have got it if it was a steal, but it was TNT's.
Do you think they're saving their war chest for when the women's rights come up?
But that is,
meanwhile, the French TV deal with Canal Plus is going to break the 500 million euro barrier.
Brilliant.
They are just trending in different directions at the moment. Yeah. One is going up.
So I made this part on an economics podcast with Mark Evans, which is, actually, I didn't make this point. It's the point I wanted to make, sorry, which is the French League is not competing with the English League anymore. It's competing with international rugby.
You have made that on this podcast, though.
Yeah.
Not economics, maybe yet.
You know, as soon as it gets big enough to make international rugby not worth it, you know, we're going to see...
Which is where the Champions League... is
exactly
to a degree.
Exactly where it
is. I don't think the French league will get there. It's where the English Premier League is as well.
But it's getting there. I mean, the first guy to think about it was Carl Heyman. So it has been in the zeitgeist of rugby players for a little while. I think it's just going to get more and more prevalent now. It's certainly in the thoughts of those guys who are not nailed on to be England starters. I don't think Jack Willis would give up his position though. Don't think quite a few of them who've made that trip over the channel would come back on the off chance they get selected or on a coin flip. Why would you?
Mm. But the one thing that ties those two things together that you mentioned about the TV deal, the Autumn Nations, and also what you talked about with the suggestion that the women's elite players or just adult women play with a size 4.5 ball, a new size to reflect the fact they have smaller hands.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that ties those two things together was the response from, well, certainly people online.
Yep.
In rugby, which is just it's almost like there's like a default whinge.
Default victim.
Default victim, default whinge. I don't know, it's the TV deal one. I don't understand the whinge.
Well, I didn't hear any. What was the whinge about the TV deal one?
Now we can't play it. Now I'm not going to be able to watch it because it's £30 a month, which I get.
No, I don't get it. I'm sick of this.
What we need we have to have free to air for the Autumn Nations, otherwise the game won't grow.
Yeah, I'm sick of this. Argument. I mean,
as we always say with any discussion like this, it's not free because the license fee is £160 a year, which is how much is that a month? £15 a month.
Yeah.
So half the cost of TNT Sport.
A month.
Yeah, and I actually want to watch TNT Sport. Well, sometimes. I want to watch the actual content of the sport. I have no interest in what happens either side of it. There again. Right, well, yeah. So I'm sick of this attitude that everything should be free, which is so prevalent in rugby. I think that's the thing. Someone was whinging the other day about the season ticket price of...
Ticket price of Bath. Yeah, Bath
ticket price
against
Bath.
Who was it? Bath, Northampton.
Bath against Northampton. Yeah, the game coming up, and the only tickets available were £114.
Good. That's brilliant.
The only tickets left. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, as an economist would point out, it's high. You should be happy that it's high because now you get the chance to go. If it was low, you wouldn't have a ticket. So don't whinge. And also, Bath have struggled for how long to build a stadium? Building a stadium is a hell of a lot more expensive than £140 per ticket.
So I understand the sentiment of the people that complain about the price of that ticket.
They're losers.
But the argument that is stopping rugby from growing because you can't reach another demographic. As you just said, if the tickets were cheap, the tickets would instantly sell out.
Mm.
And...
If they were cheap, they wouldn't though, because you've got to pitch it at a point that is you're going to sell out like last minute.
Well, yeah, no, quite. So the games would sell out, and Bath would have more debt on their balance sheet.
Sale tickets are cheap, and
sale tickets are cheap. Exactly,
they can never sell out.
So the market dictates what tickets are worth, not individuals on Reddit and Twitter.
Exactly,
I can never see Bath again. Okay, fine, don't. You know, Crimea River. Watch on TV. You know, pay you £30 a month. For £30 a month, you can watch multiple games of rugby on TNT. It's this idea that everything should be free. And I hate it in rugby. Because what you effectively have, me and Tim spoke about this on the Patreon, is this, I see it literally on a daily basis or weekly basis when I go to my rugby club. You have the rugby club where we pay our match fees, and we pay our monthly subs because it's a point of pride that you pay for your rugby club and you contribute to it. Now, if you're unable to do so on an individual basis, we will accommodate that because that's what mates do and that's what clubs do. They're there to support each other, but they're only there to support each other because everyone else contributes. It's like a group decision. In the same building is the football team, which think that all the funding that they have should always go to just providing sport, and therefore their players never pay because they never pay. They never have any investment or any skin in the game of showing up every week. They struggle like mad. So you might get five teams out because football's an easy game to play, but constantly with different lads, right? And then on the far end of this scale, it's something like CrossFit. I pay, well, as you know, Tim, a lot of money for CrossFit. Mm-hmm. But because you pay a lot of money, you're bought in. You go and buy the shoes.
You're committed.
You show up nine times a week. You know that, like, that's what you do. Rugby shouldn't necessarily be free. I was talking to someone who runs a rugby club in the Midlands. No surprise who that might be. And he made the same point that everyone is whinging at them, like, where's our money? What are you going to do for us? Like, do it yourself. And this Balls argument.
Let's talk about that. So the suggestion of creating a new size ball, 4.5, for adult women to play with.
Yes. So I saw some accusations flying around, like, well, it's hard enough for women to get rugby balls as it is, but size 4.5 balls in developing markets will, get this quote, prevent access. Now, what they mean is it's going to be a bit more expensive. But if a group of women...
Well, more expensive initially, only on the first round of balls. Every time after that, it's the same cost that getting balls would be any other year.
Well, no, Tim, you didn't listen to what I said. They've been denied access. They don't have access, whatever that means, right?
What do you play with normally?
Well...
We play with the men... No, most women's teams will have a bag of their own balls. They don't get... They don't just, like, please, can we have a ball to play with tonight?
And you may not have porridge either. Like, it's nonsense,
so we can bring it in 2 years' time, in which case, or a year's time, you're going to... At some point in every team's lifespan, you buy new balls to play with.
Yeah, but what about this, Tim? Like, if you have, say, 15, let's say, 23 women form a club, they want to play, and between all of them, they can't be bothered to buy a ball, I don't think they should play, right? And furthermore, if the local community don't think they're important enough to fund a ball, maybe if the community doesn't want to pay for your rugby and you don't want to pay for your rugby, you don't play rugby. That would be my suggestion. The idea that a size 4.5 ball is in any way a barrier to access or reduced access to rugby is not... You've bothered building a field, and erecting two posts, but sourcing a size 4.5 ball, that is beyond the pale. You simply can't do it.
And also, if there were some short-term cash flow issues, which meant you couldn't purchase a rugby ball or a bag of rugby balls, then I'm sure that there would be, you know...
Just think about it.
I would think at the top level that the balls would be supplied...
Yeah,
and at lower community levels, I'm sure people wouldn't mind. Today, we've only got a size 5 balls. Is that okay? Yeah, of course. The level of victimhood that was brought into the responses to this story, it was just astounding.
Yeah, and then someone says, why don't you cover women's rugby? Because of this.
Well,
this is why.
Well, actually, that's not why from my perspective. But, yeah, no, it was Squidge. It was Squidge himself who called us out and said we should use our platform, quote unquote. We should use our platform to cover women's rugby. Now, from time to time, we do.
I don't.
And the point being,
I do it with size 4 balls because finally they're making some good decisions.
Well, this is my perspective. There are X amount of hours in the day. I have children. I have work.
Yeah.
I have other commitments. I love my rugby, but there are so many hours in the day. At the point when I've watched every bit of rugby from the competitions that I already love, and I have nothing to do, then I will consider maybe watching something else and commenting on that.
No, I don't think I would.
I occasionally.
Yeah. Maybe World Cup final.
Have you watched any of the Six Nations?
No.
I've not actually this year.
I haven't either, because there's been so much rugby on.
Yeah, because it's never come to a time when I would normally now be watching rugby. There's no rugby, therefore I'll look for some alternative rugby. Like, for example, on Friday night, I watched some of the Gloucester Ospreys game. Yeah. On Saturday morning, I watched some of my beloved Hurricanes batter the Chiefs. Great game. I even watched a little bit of the... Oh, I can't remember which one I've watched so much of. Was it Rebels versus Pacifica? Anyway, but I'll watch it if it's on and it's accessible. It's not been on at the time when I've not been watching anything else.
Are you saying you've been denied access to women's rugby?
Maybe that is what I'm saying.
Yeah. It's not knocking the sport. It's just I'm knocking the notion from Squidge that we should be compelled to use our platform. That was the phrase you used.
Now, I know
our platform.
Yeah, this is Tim again. YouTube beef now. YouTube rivals.
No, not at all. He's very good at YouTube. I take umbrage with that phrase.
Look,
and the suggestion that we're abandoning our post by having a podcast where we talk about the games that we have seen.
I am in no way abandoning my post. My post is to watch men's rugby and talk to my mates about it on Sunday. That is my post, right? There is no abandonment of any. I've been fairly consistent for 11 years on this point. I would say this though. Why do I deserve the plaudits and possibly the benefits from exploiting the world's most valuable sporting investment opportunity? I am doing a moral service, much like apparently it's a moral service that women must be promoted to play rugby. I am doing an equally moral service by leaving it alone, because if I did get involved, I'd probably dominate that market as well.
Squidge's argument is we're compelled to use our platform to talk about women's rugby because it's the only part of the sport that's growing. And so to your point, imagine how screwed rugby would be if people like us just hopped off men's rugby. Oh, it's having a tough time. Let's sack it. Let's jack it.
Yeah. Let's talk about the only bit that is growing.
I mean, if you're asking me to do it, right? If you're asking me to talk about women's rugby, it is broken, right? Because I'm not interested. My argument would be, let people who are interested do it, because they'll do a damn sight better job than I would. I'm not even interested in the URC. I'm barely interested in the Challenge Cup. Like, I'm just not interested, right? And there is no problem with not being interested in a certain aspect.
There's lots of
rugby.
Things I'm not interested in. I haven't watched any of the Masters this weekend. The golf.
Same.
No, I know.
Same. I've not watched any F1. I just have...
Do you think it's some sort of moral... There's a moral imperative that... You should do it is bizarre.
Whereas in 2 weekends' time, Lancashire Cup final, I guarantee I'll be talking about the Broughton Park under 16s.
A lot more than the Premier 15s.
Because that's a game that I will have actually watched.
Exactly. Look, the beautiful thing about rugby is, and this applies to women's rugby as well, if you like that form of the game, it exists for you and embrace it.
Brilliant.
And if you want to talk about it with your three mates, I will talk about your podcast and tell you where to go. And on that note, I will say, if you want to find out some great analysis on women's rugby, look up Squidge.
Yeah.
There you go.
Absolutely.
He does it really, really 100%. Well.
100%.
Let him profit from the undoubtedly most profitable... The most profitable investment opportunity the sport has ever seen.
Well, there is. So we got sent in one of our WhatsApp groups a post by Elmer Schmidt, presenter, broadcaster... Now, just
good presenter.
Good, really good presenter. Definitely.
She's a great thinker, though.
She's great.
I can tell.
She's great. She knows her rugby. She's great.
Yep. She does. She definitely knows her rugby.
Yep. That's important.
So, I've just actually seen when this was dated. So,
wasn't it this week?
No. So, we got sent it this week. The date is 27th of October, 2023, which is one day before
the World Cup final.
The post was...
Interesting.
And I quote, I'm looking at it right now, "Women's rugby will make more money than men's rugby ever did or could, mark my words."
Okay, well, we will be marking that. Do you know what? I hope that the clip then, do you know when I just laughed in that bigoted way? I hope that one day it gets clipped up and put on some sort of Netflix documentary about how successful the women's game is, and I was horribly wrong. That's what I hope. I hope that is my legacy. I hope I'm the bigger, the laughter at women's rugby, and I'm made famous by its global success. I just don't think it's going to happen.
I would love to see it be more popular. I was talking to my wife today about, she's really got into her cycling. She's doing a triathlon, she's doing an Ironman in a few weeks' time. And she came back from a long cycle. She did 70-odd K today, and she said to me, I out for 3 hours and I only saw two other women cycling. And I was like, okay. He said, I saw dozens and dozens of men. And I was like, okay. He said, it's a shame, isn't it, that there weren't more women? And I was like, is it? yes. Like, it would be good if there were more women getting fitter, doing that, like As a general principle, but
I'm all for women getting hotter.
Yeah, exactly.
I encourage it massively. If they want to go do squats, I'd buy the weights for that. I mean, you're not having the money for the size 4.5 ball, but if you want a squat rack.
But what's, I was like,
well, community squat rack.
What do you want to do? And she was like, well, it'd be better if it was more equal, men and women. So I was like, well, why do you think men, we live in South Manchester, relatively affluent area of South Manchester. She was cycling around Wilmslow, Alderley Edge, Knutsford, Macclesfield, like these. Everyone's got means around there. It's not that the women have not got the money to buy their bikes. It's like, in what way do you want it to be equal? Do you want to, like, have more women doing it, but forced to do something that they have access to but choose not to? Or do you just want fewer men do it? Do you want to just, like, say, no, sorry, Dave, you can't go out because...
That's how communism works. Everyone's equal. We can't have people living on different floors of the house. Everyone lives on the same floor, so you get rid of the staircase and everyone's in the basement.
Exactly.
Do you remember the Adam Carolla, Rich Man, Poor Man?
Yeah, I love this. So I never actually watched the or listened to the Carolla
bit.
We could take this to the Patreon pod.
No, because I can't make this stretch out for 40 minutes, unfortunately.
and we've got to finish soon, because I'm on an early train tomorrow.
Okay.
So, Rich Man, Poor Man is, what do very rich people do and what do very poor people do? Like, they hunt for their own food. Like, they wear dressing gowns during the day.
Travel places by boat.
They drive vintage cars.
Yeah, 40-year-old cars.
Yeah. The one is cycling to work. Now, you only ever see the poor man version of this if you go into CrossFit at 5:30 in the morning, and if you want a hidden metric, it's people that ride mountain bikes to Trafford Park at 5:30, which is the most miserable sight of it. And the contrast between those guys, who bloody hell, I mean, you've got to have something about you to get up in the morning in the rain to go to Trafford Park on a mountain bike, and the mammal going to KPMG every morning on the 5 grand bike, there could not be a bigger difference.
100%. When you travel in early, if you drive or run or do whatever, you see, like, so I'm often running around West London at 5 in the morning or 5:30, and there are only two types of cars. There are...
Electric cars?
No, as in, there are... £100,000 plus cars.
Yes.
And there are bangers. Like, there's nothing in between at that time because it's the
people. Someone's coming off the night shift or someone's heading to their finance job.
Yeah. Or going to their job as a porter or heading to the finance job. Yeah exactly.
So working on Trafford Park is you must see it when you.
Yeah.
It's an absolute eye opener.
Oh, I don't go too early CrossFit. God, no. I don't do 6 a.m. CrossFit. I'm not insane. If you're not a psychopath.
If you're not doing 6 a.m., are you even taking it seriously? I don't even know if you're taking it seriously. I don't think you are.
Yeah. Well, to that point, though, it's kind of exactly the same with rugby. The reason why, what's the reason why? And this is the level of questioning that some people never get to. Like, oh, God, isn't it, like, again, oh, God, women don't cycle. That's really bad. It's an imbalance. Well, no. Why is that the case? Because men are actually quite like their own space and their own time. Yeah. More on average.
Yep.
Not everyone, on average, more than women, who are, on average, much more social. So they will end up doing things where they're part of a little community, do things in groups, and cycling is not that. So hence you get more men cycling. But it's the same with rugby. Yeah. When the people running rugby try and engineer rugby to be for everyone, negates the fact that the point of rugby is that people who like violence... Or, well, not violence.
No, violence is
physicality and challenge.
Being scared, the risk of being injured, the chance to dominate someone.
The discipline discipline within the training, but also the discipline within the games. Yeah. Like, there are so many laws that you have to abide by that you need discipline.
Oh,
it's a great...
you're right.
It's a great learning structure for life.
So, two things I want to mention before we go. Next week, I think we will have our podcast written for us, almost. Charlie Morgan is releasing an article. I can't tell you what it is about, but we are going to love it.
Have you had a part in it?
No, but I know what it's
in
about.
The genesis. You haven't been involved in the genesis of it?
If I say yes, I feel like I'd be unfairly claiming credit for nothing which I've done. So,
yeah.
All I'm going to say is I know what it is, and I think it's coming out next week. It might even be out, I'll have a look, but anyway, it is for next week. it's going to be awesome. It's going to be absolutely awesome. And if you get some of the stories in there, which I expect, it's going to be something which we will care about an awful lot. Most of the press won't, but it'll be awesome. So watch out for that in the Telegraph this week. The other thing is, did you see an email come through to us today? Now, the email was very nice. Really appreciate that. Yada, yada, yada. But the name of the team. Gordon, there's a team called Gordon League. Have you ever heard of Gordon League?
Gordon League.
Is this the one called My Old Club?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Afternoon, gents. I hope you don't mind me getting in touch. Blah, 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 blah. Anyway, he says, I'm from Gloucester, played locally for a few years after leaving Hartbury. Before I was old enough to play senior rugby, I used to travel around the southwest with my granddad watching Gordon League play.
Why is it called Gordon League? That's what I want to know.
Yeah, he said, my granddad is a life member of the club, having played for years back in the day, and has devoted so much time to it post-playing. As I got older, I struggled to attend as many matches with him. Until this weekend, I took him to watch Gordon League versus Bream in a playoff match. By the way, national leagues are still going.
Yes. Apologies for that.
Yeah,
essentially, had a good win against Plymouth.
The league, as they're known, won the match 25-20 in a proper fixture after trailing quite heavily at half-time, down to 13 men and a red card with 15 to play. It was great to see the sidelines and clubhouse rammed afterwards too. Local rugby took a bit of a battering, besides not putting out as many teams or the same quality, but I love seeing it thriving this weekend. Proper blokes playing proper hard rugby.
Never heard of Gordon League.
Exactly. I haven't that either. Give a shout out to the Gordon League boys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if you play for Gordon League, please get in contact with me. I want to know why it's called Gordon League. Is there a place called Gordon League? Is it league?
Why league? The league part's as interesting as anything.
Exactly.
Gordon.
I've already done that, Tim. I've not asked ChatGPT yet. Maybe I should ask ChatGPT.
Yeah, do it.
Gordon League. So it's in club. It's in
Hempstead, which is just southwest of the centre of Gloucester. The area seems to be called Hempstead. There's an area called St. Paul's. And
St. Paul's is a good school there, mate. Good rugby school, St. Paul's.
And not far from the River Severn, which I guess everything in Gloucester is also.
Everything, mate, goes right through the middle, mate.
Not far from...
Oh, no, Severn don't go through the middle.
No. Is that a canal?
The canal goes through the middle.
Yeah, Severn just to the west.
So I want to set up a league of teams with unusual names. So obviously Didsbury Tok H get in there.
Yeah.
And Gordon League. And there's another one which I was thinking of.
Honourable Artillery Company. I just found a picture.
I don't know if that's a player from Gordon League. But when I think about like local rugby, the man in the middle of that picture that comes up when you search Google is the most community rugby player I've ever seen. That guy.
Perfect.
Let's have a look.
Yes, my boy.
We know what he's about going forward in the scrum.
Yeah, you know it. Which brings us back to Finn Baxter, where we began the podcast.
Awesome. Yeah.
So that sort of shape man has two possibilities to play rugby. Do you know what they are?
Well, obviously prop.
Prop.
And fly half.
Correct.
I've seen it so many times.
Don't you go say number eight.
I've seen a few fly halves. The example of that.
LSH had one.
Exeter University. What was the guy's name? Ben Davis. No, it wasn't Ben Davis. Oh, shit. I've forgotten what his name is. He played professionally. He played for Exeter. Then he went to Nottingham. He was like an amazing player, fullback. It will come to me. Anyway, but I remember I turned up for the freshers trial and I was got chatting to this guy. I was like, okay, well, you clearly tight head prop. Strolled out there at 10 and just dominated. Dominated.
Well, where would you suppose if you met him on the street and he said he's a professional rugby player, Mikey Teo plays?
Oh, Mikey Teo, the US fullback.
Yeah. Played in the World Cup.
Rotund fullback.
I would suspect he played probably tight head prop or hooker.
Yeah, hooker. Because he's not enormous, was it?
Fat tens. That's just a good thing. I want I don't mean no. What's a better word than fat?
Robust.
Massive tens. Robust tens.
Yeah. LSH had one who could nail the ball.
But mind you, LSH had a team where every single player it was like rugby league. It was like 5'10" cubes.
Oh no! They were a bit. Yeah.
Their entire back row was 5'10" cubes.
There's another guy who played for Blaenau Ffestiniog called Barry, who was absolutely enormous and play 10 or 12, and you would guarantee he's a prop. He could boot the ball miles.
Didsbury Tok H is 10.
Didsbury Tok H is 10.
This season, he could do a job in the front row.
Hang on, Now.
Your player coach?
Yeah.
Really good player. He's like a robust 10.
Well, he's build of Lee Mears.
Yeah, exactly. Rest my case.
Yeah.
And I do remember watching, maybe both of you playing for Broughton Park many moons ago.
Lee Askew.
When your...
Connor.
When your tight head prop was actually kicking six.
Slotted the winning kick.
Because he was the best kicker.
From halfway.
That was quite something.
That really was something. Something.
It was sort of embarrassing and amazing at the same time.
It was amazing. Who's the other prop that nails kicks all the time? Is it Ben Tamafuna who can kick?
Well, he can't scrum, so...
No, he can't scrum. Yeah, I think I'm sure it's Ben Tamafuna, because the other one would be Weenie Antonio, and it's definitely not him. Ben Tamafuna can kick. And properly kick.
Right, how long has this gone on for?
Just very quickly, have you watched Chasing the Sun yet?
No. I know you have. I've seen your emails.
I need to
find a way of watching it.
Yeah, I think I should watch it.
Because the latest episode, I've just heard from a mate, from someone I've now kind of mates with in South Africa, who's helping me out with the trip to Cape Town.
Is it the commercial director of the Bulls?
No, I'll be one of the new owners of the Bulls. I'll be going out for lunch with.
Oh, here we go.
Sorry, Stormers.
Oh, okay.
Stormers, okay.
One of the guys that's part of the consortium that have just taken over the Stormers and tempted Kitsy.
Has he mentioned anything about the travel schedule?
I'll be going out for lunch with him in Cape Town. No, it's not the Bulls, not at all. But I've just, from this guy, he said, I've just watched episode 4 of Chasing the Sun 2, which is, it comes out every Sunday. He said, I'm not sure when you're going to get to see it, but if you don't like scrums, you're going to hate this episode. This is your dream, isn't it?
Oh, isn't it?
So yeah. I'll tell you how to watch it in a minute. But
fixtures next week.
Oh,
Premiership, isn't it?
Premiership. Yeah.
Come on, then. Let's rattle through these, Phil, so we can get some sleep.
Saracens host Gloucester. Home win. After a week of rest. Gloucester obviously didn't have a week of rest.
Well done, Gloucester.
Yeah. Just on that, I did watch some of it. They won. Beat Ospreys.
23-13.
There was... I don't know. So Gloucester, I think, have been struggling a little bit to sell out the stadium. It looked packed, and there was a lot of Ospreys fans. Obviously, because it's not a million miles from South Wales. And that's... I'm not for a British and Irish league or an English and Welsh league.
Agreed.
But it did... It kind of...
Wales would be the one that I would stomach most because it's part of the same landmass and there's a lot of history there.
There is this history of the South Wales teams playing against Gloucester and Bristol and Bath. Maybe if the Premiership does continue to struggle and, God forbid, another team goes under, then... Wales would have to get their house in order first, which it very much is not, but something could be done. That's as far as I'll go.
Yeah.
Okay, next game, the derby. Northampton Saints versus Leicester Tigers, East Midlands.
Ace.
That'd be good. That'd be very good.
Where is it?
At Franklin's Gardens.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a tasty one.
Yeah.
Oh, Leicester will want to rub their noses in it, won't they? But
they will do. Leicester, they're in danger. So you've got 4 games remaining. And, they're actually... So Leicester are down in 7th, but they are only 3 points off the top 4.
Well, but lose this one, and they're 3 games and maybe 5 or 6 points off the top 4.
Yeah, yeah.
So this is...
So Leicester have to win. Northampton, it is less important for them to win. They're 5 points clear at the top. So they might...
Equally, they'll want to put everything into this one, knowing if they win, they've got a little bit of a buffer, and then they can chill.
That's the way they'll be.
For the Champions Cup.
Yeah.
Yeah, if they win this, that's what they'll be saying. Win this game against Leicester, and then we chill out a bit.
For the Champions Cup.
God, I hope they can.
So I actually think Leicester are going to win this. I just think the physicality up front will be a bit too much. Although it's a great test. Northampton have dealt with it very well all season.
Have you seen who's playing each other the weekend before? This is almost perfect for both teams. The weekend before Newcastle. The Champions Cup, Harlequins are playing Northampton. Both teams that are involved in the semi-final. So they'll probably just go...
Handshake,
B teams.
Yeah.
Let's go.
Yeah. Although they've still... It's still not going to make any difference travelling to Dublin and Toulouse. But anyway...
But we thought that about Bordeaux. But anyway.
True. Third game on the Saturday is Chiefs host Bath, which Bath will want revenge.
I think Bath win that.
I think they probably do.
I think they probably do.
And disappointingly, just to kind of make my point that I was making before, I say England. So England play Ireland in the Women's Six Nations on Saturday. If that was, say, an 8 o'clock kickoff, I'd watch that. It's 2:15, which means I could possibly watch the first half, but then I'm going to prioritise Northampton Saints versus Leicester Tigers.
Yep.
So scheduling means that I can't watch a game that otherwise I probably would do.
Who are England playing, sorry, did you say?
England Ireland.
Oh, yeah, that's worth watching.
Yeah, but I won't get to watch it because of the scheduling. Okay. I will definitely watch Saints versus Tigers.
Okay. Yeah, fair.
Saturday we have Bristol, who are going to continue their good run, beating Newcastle Falcons, and Sale host Harlequins. Well, that's one for Sale to win.
Don't think they will.
They've got to win that, because Quins will rest. So
Quins do one of two things. Either, and this is what I think is going to happen. Well, no. Yeah, I think teams are going to prioritise the home games. So I think Northampton will go fully loaded against Leicester this weekend.
Yes.
And Harlequins will go fully loaded against Northampton in 2 weeks.
Yes.
And will rest players.
I think you're right.
Against Sale. Which makes sense when you've got your paying crowd, you've got a bit of home advantage.
Yeah, that does make sense.
Yeah.
I just don't think... I don't know, I've got some concerns about Sale at the moment, so we'll see. There again, they battered someone last week, didn't they?
Two weeks ago.
The Sale have to win if they got any chance, which they probably
don't.
Well, no, they might. There's a way to go yet. They're 5 points behind Quins in fourth. So anything other than probably a 5 maximum point win for Sale.
Yeah, actually, give me Sale on this. Won't because be you're right, Quins might rest some people and Sale have got nothing else to play for. Much like the Wolves, they will just concentrate on their domestic league.
With no relegation.
Yeah. Okay, cool.
There you go. Nice short one this week.
Yeah. Contact headchasers@gmail.com is where you can get in touch with us. Patreon.com/eggchasers for extra content to support the podcast, help keep the lights on. And as JB mentioned, there was an episode that we did last week where we covered some of the ground that we covered last week. So go and check that out. Yeah. All the extra stuff there. Patreon.com/eggchasers. Let the boys end.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.